The other thing is, too, is one of the ways that women really open themselves up to becoming demonically influenced, and I know this is going to be hard to take, but just bear with me. God established, I think I might have mentioned this last time I was here, I can't remember, I'm getting too old. And when you become an exorcist, your aging process drastically increases. It's much more rapid. I tell everybody I'm 44, 43 going on 55, but anyway, God established what's called the divine economy of authority. And basically what that is that God set up an authority structure in the natural law, in nature. So even the demons have to obey it. So very often what they'll do is, and that this means, for example, if the father of the household says binding prayers over the people because of his authority, he actually has the capacity to ward the demons off. If he fails to, he can actually open the doors. Or if he does something simple, he's the one most principally opens the door. Other people can too, the wife, next, and then the children, starting with the oldest on down. But the point being is that there's this economy, this divine economy of authority. Now, St. Thomas makes the observation, he says, that if a person acts contrary to this the order of authority, he acts contrary to an order, he is deprived of the effects of that order. What does this mean? If a wife will not submit to her husband, she will be robbed of his protection spiritually and opens herself up to becoming influenced. This is one of the things that you see almost habitually as an exorcist, today particularly because of the feminist movement. And one of the principal ways that they can really, really overcome any possession or obsession is by developing that submission. Not that he gets to treat her like trash, it's quite the opposite. St. Paul says, love your wife. And when Adam and Eve were created, St. Thomas says, and actually it's based upon the fathers, that when he says women are in three states. There's the state pre-fall. And the state pre-fall, he says women were in a state of subordination because Eve was created and subject to Adam's judgment and to his rule. But it's a subordination because of the fact that Adam always looked out for her benefit and always looked out for her well-being. But then after the fall, when Eve stepped out from under that authority by saying, here, eat the apple, Adam, that she stepped out from that divinely established structure where it's his place to lead, then she became, she was robbed of the effects of his protection to a certain degree. And then what happens is she enters, St. Thomas says, into a state of subjection, which means Adam no longer looks out for her well-being. That's why St. Paul says, love your wife. Why? Love is defined as willing to do good for another. So if you love your wife, you're always going to be looking out for her well-being. So love is the action on the side of the man. It's the remedy for his tendency to not govern her in a way that's best for her spiritually. Then St. Thomas says that in heaven, so in this life now, all women are in a state of subjection in some way or another. But then he says, in the next life, women are neither in state of subordination nor subjection because some women rule in heaven. So the issue is not whether you rule here. This is where the feminist movement has completely lost. There are far more women higher and probably in heaven than their husbands because of the fact that they subordinated themselves, they were far more virtuous than their husbands. So the fact of the matter is, it's not whether you get to tell your husband what to do in this life, it's whether you're going to get to tell him what to do in the next life. Okay. All right. So the point is that we have to follow that divinely established structure because if we don't, then we become subject to demonic influence. And when the wife is not subordinate to her husband, she opens up the children, not just a bad example, so it's a psychological thing as well, but she opens up the children to becoming demonically influenced by demons of disobedience, insubordination, and that type of thing. So very often when you see the kid that's unruly, not always, because I have seen kids that are absolutely unruly, it has absolutely nothing to do with the parents are leading a rightly ordered life. But a lot of times you look at the kid, and the kid's just completely out of control. All you have to do is look at the wife, and she's subordinate. And the opposite also applies, too. I've seen families where the wife did everything on her part. She tried to lead an absolutely flawless life, but he just treated her like complete, absolute trash. And the children would then treat her, their mother like garbage, and they would also, they themselves were not very subordinate. because they realized that even if you're subordinate, you don't have to be. And so the father actually introduced demons of insubordination in the family that way. Because, and this is something which is very important, you know, you can tell guys, sometimes you see this and you're trying to sort things out. Okay, why is God allowing this possession case to go on for a while? Why is this person obsessed? It's because he wants the situations to be worked out in families. Well, sometimes you just have to say to the husband, do you love your wife? And you always get, oh yeah, because he doesn't want to look like an adult by saying, no, no, no. So he says, yeah, I love her. And then you just, all you have to do is ask one question, and this will usually floor most men. Do your children know it? And that is something which you very often do not see. Because there is a tendency out of original sin in man to be inclined not to love their wives. And that is, that's why St. Paul says you got to love her. That's why he said that. All right. The next is sacramentals, and that's what we're going to talk about, a number of those. The first is the St. Benedict medal, different kinds of medals. Different kinds of medals will have different effects. So, for example, the miraculous medal will very often drive out demons which are holding on to places or people or things of that sort to prevent them from converting. But the St. Benedict medal is quite powerful. Now, there's a number of different ways that you can use St. Benedict medals, such as putting it at the entrance of each door and window to your home. We don't know why, but exorcists know that demons actually enter through, technically speaking, they don't enter through anything. They just apply their intellect or will wherever they want to, and that's where it happens. But they very often talk about how demons will enter the home through the doors or through the windows. And so if you put them over the one over each of the windows, that'll actually help provide some protection. Also on things that behave strangely. There's a particular book which I print out for priests to do exorcisms, with some private exorcisms. And I'll tell you what, man, trying to get that thing out of my prayer when I'm praying it is just an absolute nightmare. I didn't get the problem solved until I put a St. Benedict on them and taped it to the printer. I've also heard priests say, oh yeah, I've taped it to the computer when it was acting strange, and all of a sudden, boom, it just stopped doing it. So some people just have a real affection for electronic things. I think the reason they do is because they know that we like them and we depend upon them, and so our chain is easily danged around by them. You see that with people when the computer goes awry, most people go, and they just get really angry and irritated very quickly. Part of that is the reason there was a philosopher who, his name was Vogel, and he made the observation that electronic things or technology bring us a certain pleasure and use because we get to control them and they bring us something that we like, right? And he says as a result, most people should really be doing some type of thing to do penance in order to counteract the intemperance that can kind of come up in relationship to electronic gadgets. You see that with guys more than women, where they're just like, you know, they're glued to the thing. And that's a sign of intemperance, ultimately. But anyway, you can tape it to computers. People can also carry it. You can tell your children to carry it. Now, you don't tape it to the kid's forehead. But, you know, having the children carry it with them and that type of thing, especially like on a scapular, which I'll talk about in a little bit, those things are particularly useful. You have them in your cars, you should have your cars blessed, etc. For that. And then, so metals are also sacred images. Enthronement in the Sacred Heart, you should have your home enthroned in the Sacred Heart, that's particularly powerful, and the Immaculate Heart, that's a particularly powerful way to provide protection for your home. Okay, so there's different kinds of metals and other kinds of physical sacramentals. Then there's holy oil. Now here we're not talking about the oil of the sick that's destined for use in the sacrament. It's an abuse on the side of priests to use the sacrament of the sick or extreme unction for people who are possessed. And it's abuse. Why? Because the church has always taught that you cannot use the sacrament of the sick unless there is grave illness with the potential of death and there's some illness accompanying it. Well, so this is what happened in the progression theologically, and this is why it's all very sloppy. First it was, okay, it's used for people who are gravely sick. Then it just became, they were giving it to anybody who's sick. So somebody had a hangnail that came up during Mass and got anointed. Then they said, oh, well, we can use it for mental illness. Well, unless it's physiologically based, unless it's going to cause a person possible death in the future, you can't use it. Then it went to that, oh, well, we'll use it for people who are possession because it's very similar to mental illness. That was the theological progression. The problem is it can't be used unless there's some danger of death, and it has to be based in some illness. That being the case, and the death doesn't have to be proper, it can be removed. That being the case, you can't be anointing people that are possessed unless there's some physiological illness attached with it. Then you can use it, and it will have its a good effect. Otherwise, it's an abuse of the sacrament. But this holy oil, it's an actual ritual out of the old rite in which the oil is actually blessed, it's exercised and blessed. It may be used on things such as on people, so you can, I tell people very frequently, you know, take a little bit on your thumb and make the sign of the cross over your children's forehead each night before you go to bed with it. Now, parents can actually bless their children just as they can curse them, they can also bless their children. It stems from the office as parent. And they can say, you know, God bless you, and things of that sort. They can't bless other people. You can only bless people that are under you in this divine economy of authority. So fathers can bless their wives and their children. Women can bless their children. They cannot bless their husbands. The children cannot bless their parents in that manner. But they can say, may God bless you, by invoking, asking God, please bless my parents, or please bless my husband. They can do that. So the father can say, God bless you. The father can say, may God bless you. Now, in English, we say, God bless you. It can be also in a subjunctive sense, in the sense that it's a may. But usually if they do it, if they distinguish that, it's actually better. But you can take the holy oil and use that. There was one case where an exorcist was called to someone's house because the kids were just running around amok for no reason whatsoever. The priest just broke out the holy oil, put it on the kids' foreheads, and boom, immediately they just stopped and mellowed out. So sometimes you'll see that. I'm not saying every time your kid gets to be obnoxious that somehow or another it's because he's possessed. But I am saying that if you do that regularly, it'll help provide a certain level of protection. You can also use it on yourself, just making it sign of the cross on your forehead. You can place the oil in the area that is influenced by the demon, even in bodily, or, as I said, making a sign of the cross. You can also put it on things by making the sign of the cross over the thing that is discovered to be influenced. This includes animals, although normally it's better to use holy oil on animals, unless you put it on their forehead or their head or something. But even then, you have to be careful because the next thing they want to do is they want to get it off and that type of thing. So it's better to use holy water with animals. You can put it in houses. You make signs of the cross made over the front entrances to the doors and windows or on items in the house which are affected. When exercising a house, be sure to make a sufficient increase to your neighbor. One time this one woman came to me. She says, my house is possessed, things are moving around the house. And everyone's like, yeah, things are moving around the house. So I said to her, the diocese had sent two exorcists there, and they both looked at the two priests. They looked at it and they said, yeah, the house is possessed. They left without doing anything. They're like, oh, there's something wrong here. So I said, what are your neighbors like? Well, she had a witch coven living next door. And so I said, well, there's your problem. But the coil oils very often, if the priest exercises the location and then blesses it, things like that, very often the witch coven will disband because they can't perform it. Usually they'll try and do something to break that blessing, and sometimes it does get broken, and then you end up with even a worse situation than you had before. But, you know, this is spiritual warfare. This is actually part of it. But using the holy oil can actually keep those kinds of things at bay from affecting the house. I often tell people, ask what your neighbors are like, and what the kind of neighborhood is, and what the behavior of was the people who lived there before you. It's a good idea to kind of get a sense of, you know, who lived in the house, you know, that type of thing, to get a sense of what was in there so that you end up with bigger problems. Because I have had people who bought a house and couldn't find out there was a witch who lived in there and she performed witchcraft, and the people being influenced as a result of it. So I tell people, stay. Not every house is that way. You know, not everybody's in witchcraft, but you just want to make sure you're not getting a handful. So, also, make sure you use it on each person in the house when you exercise the house if you're a priest. And it's a good idea to have it present during exorcism unless there's some cause for spiritual concern about it. All of this should tell you that demons love place. They love places just as much as we do. Why? Well, it's kind of like this. You know, when people get married, wherever the guy proposed to her, the woman very often has an affection for that place. in her heart, because that's where a good thing happened, right? And God's the same way. We bless places, and so it's a good place. Well, demons are the opposite. When very simple things happen to people, they like it because they get a certain power out of the place. Very often they have control over it, things like that, and so they like places quite a bit. And this is based upon the fact that sin or the evil committed in the place. This is why, okay, they like places and they like things, because they like taking possession of things. This is one of the reasons why when I read the New Book of Blessings, I was just absolutely floored. I wasn't scandalized, because I'm pretty much beyond that, but I was floored that they said, you don't bless the things, you bless the people. That is just absolute insanity, and whoever put that out should be flogged. Because the fact of the matter is that what they were doing is allowing demons to gain greater access to people in their lives. It was just spiritually short-sighted. If you discover that something demonic or by witchcraft is done in the house or some other place, it should be exorcised. And also make sure it's permissible to offer Mass there, but very often saying Mass in a place that's been possessed will help significantly to break the possession. Holy oils can be used. It can be consumed. So I usually tell people, you know, get lots of it, you can consume it. But you don't fry your bacon in it, because you're going to end up dumping it down the drain or whatever. But the point is, it should all be consumed, but you can use it in salads and things of that sort. You can use it in cooking. Thus the cooking is the type of thing that is going to be dumped out, or it's not going to be consumed in the process. And this is a really good thing, because as you consume holy oil and blessed salt, or exercise salt and the oils, it provides you a certain amount of protection. And if you're being influenced, it'll also start driving these kinds of things out. Very often people are possessed, they'll receive the Eucharist, and every half an hour you give them holy water. And it's pretty brutal. If you don't have holy water, you got to feed them oil, and that's usually not very pleasant. But it really has an effect on them, especially depending on the location in which the possession has occurred, like if it's in the stomach or something of that sort. I also tell people, if you have teenagers, feed it to them regularly. Not because I don't like teenagers, but just because of the fact that they need the extra grace to get through a period that is very often difficult in our lives. Okay. The next is the use of votive candles that are blessed in the old rites, with the old rites holy water, which I'll talk about the whole holy water, why you want to do it in the old rite. But if you bless them, it's actually the blessing is to drive out demons of the air. Now, what happened was just as there were angels that were assigned the task of taking care of the weather and things of that sort, when the demons who were part of that rank fell, at least this is my understanding, when they fell, some of them took possession of the air. Now, some of them say that they actually possessed the air because they vacillated, and so they weren't cast all the way down into hell. That's just bad theology. And it's not based upon sound reasoning. But what happened is there were certain that they took possession of the air. Now, what this means is whenever we do something, whenever we curse or we do something like that, we use bad speech, what will happen is what will very often happen is that the demons will take possession of that particular air. It can have a cumulative effect. Well, how do we know this? There's an actual ritual. It's in the Ritual of Toledo. It's in a book I give to priests. And in it, there is an exorcism of storms and tempests. And I'll give you an example. One time, a deacon, because the deacons can do certain things, so can priests. This guy is now a priest in the fraternity. There was just this really bad hailstorm that was just pounding them. So he started that, and when he finished the last line, it just stopped. What this means is that it can have a cumulative effect. Have you ever heard of global warming? But don't get me wrong, I don't think there is global warming. I do think that the behavior of the weather patterns is getting strange, but Our Lady already predicted that at La Salette, that the weather patterns would change. And one of the reasons they're changing is because there's more and more demonic influence over nature, because man's being sinful with respect to nature. And so he's ceding control over these things to the demonic. It can also be based somewhat in the science, but the science obviously is, the jury is out. I mean, even though the popular people are all heading in one direction, a lot of the scientists are really serious about it, said, well, we don't really know. And I always get a charge out of reading those things about how people who are big into global warming are attending a conference where it's snowing in August. But anyway. The votive candles, because they're exercised, they'll actually drive genes out of the air. This is one of the reasons that you should have a votive candle burning all the time in your house, because it'll actually help to drive them out. This is also true about incense and the asparagus at Mass, but it's also true about incense. The incense is blessed. There's a funny story about, I believe it was Pius IX, that he had an audience with some Protestants, and at the end of it, they said, please bless us, please bless us. And he didn't want to do it, and they just kept insisting. He said, okay, I'll throw many cards and crucifix in order for marbles, which is the Latin phrase in which you do to bless incense. And the translation is, may you be blessed in whose honor you shall be burnt. But anyway, the point being is that the actual exercise, the epiphany, I usually exercise hordes of the incense at the epiphany, because it has an exorcism attached to it. That's very effective for people to burn in the houses and when you're doing exorcisms to drive things out. So incense is good. The priest can just bless it outright. There is a blessing in this book I give to priests that actually has it in there. It's unfortunate they drop the asparagus at Mass, because the asparagus would actually drive demons out of people. And it also blesses people, but it would actually drive them out, so they could actually concentrate at Mass. So it's unfortunate that that's been dropped for the most part. I believe you can still do it anyway, but they drop it. Okay, why don't we stop there? And if anybody has any questions, because there's a number of other things I want to talk about that you can do, but I want to kind of stop there to give us some time for questions. Yes.
Children, young children that are sociopaths, have you had any dealings with that?
Mm-hmm. I got one right now. It's about a year and a half old, and that thing is just unbelievable. I mean, it does and says things that a kid 7, 8, 9, 10 years of age would think and do. So, which is obviously, but kids, even younger kids like 7 to 10, yeah, they become sociopathic at that stage, and that's usually a sign of possession. In most sociopaths, it's possession in most cases, or an extreme form of obsession. Yes?
Do curses have to be reversed by the person who said them?
No. They don't have to. It's blessed. It will have a profound effect if they do, but it can be broken just by the person who has received the curse and the priest assisting. So
you would have to have a priest?
Not always. Sometimes people just do it on their own, but it depends on the degree of how much they're influenced. Yes?
How can you know a good witch in your area?
Strange things moving around in your house, very often? No. That's one of the ways. But one of the other reasons, one of the other ways that you should just find, will have the stickers like Wiccans or certain things they'll put in their yards, which are dead giveaways, like little statues, and, or they'll have the round ball sitting out in the middle, surrounding, there's some things like that. So there's sometimes they'll give you a cue. A lot of them are pretty bold, especially after they start having effect with their witchcraft, to kind of bold them, just let you know. Yeah, I'm a witch. Yes.
What can you do for somebody who seems to be affected by evil spirit, but they won't? They don't know it and won't do anything about it.
It depends. If they don't want you doing anything, they don't want to receive your help, there's absolutely nothing you can do. This is one of the reasons why, if you get a person, very often you get a person who's possessed. I recently had a case. The person came to me, and it was a clear case of possession. We even discovered where the possession was within her. And there came a point where she didn't want to give something up. So, because she wouldn't give up, and that ultimately meant then she wasn't going to do what I asked her to do, she wasn't going to really take the help, and so you just say, well, then there's nothing I can do for you. I'll pray for you, but that's it. If there's no blockage on their side, you can say the binding prayers, and slowly it'll start having its effect. But you better say some prayers for protection for yourself to make sure you don't end up yourself becoming beat around a little bit. Because they, no good deed will go unpunished is their motto. So, yes.
Father, what can you do to pray against fornication? A lot of teenagers are into that. Illegitimacy?
Yeah.
Homosexuality, teens are into that.
Yeah.
And also, I forgot the other thing. sexuality. There was one other thing that I had in my mind to kind of explain here. But what made you prepare for that?
Well, the principal thing that you have to, okay, let me tell you the progression. In Latin, there's a phrase in the Old Testament, and the phrase is fornicantur obste. That's the phrase that you hear in Latin. And fornicare actually means to engage in idolatry. But it's also the root word for fornication. And the reason being is because what always happens is the minute right worship to God is not rendered, the first effect is that people start getting involved in things that are against the sixth commandment, you know, in the wrong way. That's the first effect. In fact, they actually had a phrase in the tradition that liturgical abuse leads to self-abuse. For priests, liturgically abusing very often has a huge, really struggles with chastity. Where the other way around, if he's trying to be very reverent, that type of thing, that very often the chastity will come. Right? So part of that is because once you do sanctifying grace by doing, by worshiping God in an undue manner, then you're kind of left to the wilds. Okay, so one of the first effects of undue worship is the spirit of fornication. Then, of course, the spirit of fornication, we all know this if you're pro-life. Well, if you have the spirit of fornication, then you're going to have contraception. If you have contraception, you're going to have abortion. If you have abortion, you're going to have euthanasia. So you just go down the road, right? So the moral of the story is that, and this is why I tell people, the cause is always greater than the effect. You know, steam isn't as hot as the flame that produces it. Okay, so that means that undue worship to God is a worse sin than abortion. Now, but that doesn't mean that abortion is an atrocity. It's just abortion tells us just how whacked out we really are in relationship to the first commandment. So the way you get pain straightened out is you try to get them involved in right order worship. That means they have to be taught their catechism, they have to be taught right and wrong, they have to be doing those kinds of things. Now, if they're already involved in it, you're just going to have to do prayer and fasting and do the things to try and get them protected and encourage them to stop it and things of that sort. But until that gets straightened out, you know, I find with the youth today that unless they have some semblance of morality or religion to try and get them to stop is virtually impossible. The only time they'll stop, and it's usually women who won't stop, is because they're just sick of the effects of it. You know, they're sick of the effects of the fornication, they're sick of the, you know, that type of thing. And so, whereas guys are less sensitive to that kind of thing. So, but the point is that you've got to get them established, and right, this is why you've got to get your teenagers praying. Most people systematically fail in praying with their children. Systematically. And then they wonder why their kids are having a hard time going through people. Well, they have no habit of prayer. Where's the grace going to come from? You know, going to Mass on Sunday is good, and the grace of some grace will come from that, but that's not enough. It's a necessary thing, but it's not enough. Getting them to confession regularly and things of that sort are very helpful, too. Yes.
Yeah. I was listening to Father Carapi. He had a whole series on spiritual warfare. Mm-hmm. It's pretty good. He talked about in state of grace, if you come into contact with something that's cursed, or if someone puts, like, you know, the evil eye or something like that on you, that somehow it bounces off of you and goes back and inflicts that individual. Are you truly immune or completely protected by being in state of grace?
Sometimes. But sometimes that's not true. In fact, exorcists are very careful. You know, sometimes when people are cursed by means of some type of, like, by voodoo, so there's some, like, a nail or something that's in the individual, sometimes you can actually see the thing moving around in the individual. And it can't be surgically removed. That's not how this thing works. Because then what happens is when they go to surgically remove it, the demons, you know, move it around or cause it to just look like it disappears and things of that sort. So what happens is, though, is that during the exorcism, it'll come out. It comes out, you know. The demons are coughed up, and that's how the possession is broken. You don't touch it, because then you can become affected. You handle it with some other thing, like a cloth or plastic or something like that, and then you burn it or destroy it. And if it can't be burned or destroyed, you put it in a river. You have to be careful with stuff you burn. Don't put the ashes down your plumbing, because then you're going to end up with some serious plumbing problems. Not just because ash might clog it up, but because the demons then, if there's any residual aspect of the demons on it, they'll plug that up, so you always put it in a stream of river so it's clogged up, etc. So there's specific ways it has to be handled. Sometimes I think I would be, I personally, I never tell people that you're immune from it, ever, regardless of how holy you are, because it's, this stuff just, even the best of people can become influenced by handling it. So they have to be careful. It's true that sometimes it will actually affect more of the person who put the hex on the thing than the person who handles it. But on the other hand, don't touch it, make sure it's handled properly. It's usually what I tell people. Yeah.
Role in deliverance, especially in a lot of Matthew, you know, Jesus says, go therefore, make the sacrifice, you know.
What is the role of the laity in deliverance, really, is the question. The basic thing is by prayer and fasting. It's really the support. That's what the Exilium Christian Order was actually started for, so that people would actually provide support for the priest. Because delivering somebody requires, God wants a certain level of merit to be obtained before he'll actually drive them out. And so that can be much more quickly gained if the lay people are praying for the people that are possessed and doing penance for them. That's the principal goal. There are some cases where, for instance, if a woman is possessed, you never do exorcisms on a woman, at least in the beginning stages, without having other people of undisputable character there, because the demons can actually do some things that will, you know, unless a man's of extreme virtue, you're going to end up in some trouble. So they have to have other people there to hold them down and things like that, sort of, sometimes. But because of the fact that, but normally lay people should not be trying to deliver other people on their own, because then they just open themselves into a tap because they're not sufficiently protected. That doesn't mean that you can't say binding prayers for other people, but you shouldn't be, you know, putting your hands on them and trying to say prayers to deliver them. It's just, you're opening yourself up for some serious trouble. There was a case of some Protestants one time who decided, someone who was in New York, this person was possessed, and this Protestant says, oh, let's deliver. So they go up in the guy's apartment, and they start saying the prayers. And as they're saying the prayers, the demon started, the individual who was possessed started beating them, and the demon beat him within an inch of their life. And as he's beating them, he says, you have no authority over me. This is one of the reasons why I tell people, don't get involved in something that you're not prepared to get involved with. The priest has jurisdiction, there's a certain level of protection that's provided him, and there's even certain things he has to do. If you saw the movie Emily Rose, the mistake that exorcist made, the mistake the exorcist made was not saying binding prayers to bind the demons from harming her or keeping her from eating. And it's a common mistake that exorcists make. Oh, yeah, I did mention it last time, but it's the same thing with this. If you don't have this requisite authority, or if you don't know what you're doing, stay out of it, because you can really get hurt very quickly and very easily. And you can end up with bigger problems than the person you're trying to deliver. So really, it should be in praying for the priests that do it and for their intentions. I tell people, pray for my intention. Don't pray for the person who's liberated. There's a reason for that. And that's because sometimes the liberation comes in a particular form. You know, it may be that the liberation will come in the form of this person breaking an attachment they have to something. So the priest will be praying not so much that the demons are driven out directly, but that the attachment's broken so that the possession can be broken. And that's more efficacious than just praying directly for praying directly so that the person is liberated. The other thing is, too, is that if you offer it up to Our Lady and then say, here, you give it to this priest, you know, I request that you give it to this priest for his intentions, then you're double protected in a certain sense. It comes from the priest, or you're protected behind the priest and behind Our Lady. So, whereas if you do it directly, very often, I've had this before, I had people that I've liberated, and they thought that they would start praying for the people that I'm trying to liberate, and then the next thing you know, they're getting beat around again. So I tell them, don't do that. You pray for my intentions, and then that's what's the most effective thing. And that's usually what I tell people to actually help. If you're talking about somebody who can't get access to a priest and that type of thing, then usually what I do is tell them, you know, hook them up with the Exilium Christian Order, give them the binding prayers, and pray for them. But be very careful so that, and do everything to protect yourself, get to confession regularly, get to communion regularly, and things of that sort, so that you're protected, so that nothing happens to you. So, but that's the particular role of prayer and penance. It's a support role, principally. Yes?
Can you explain the role that demons can have over music, especially secularism and pop music, and what the effects it has on that?
Well, part of it is, you know, Satan is actually the angel of music, you know. That's one of his actual titles. And so some of the music, when you hear it, you know, it's kind of weird. You'll listen to some of the music that's out there today, and you're like, that sounds vaguely familiar, and then you realize, well, that's just like the Possession case I was listening to, like the way the guy's screaming and carrying on and that type of thing. But that actually tells you something. In the list, you'll see it's compiled over here. If you can get a copy of it, one of them is listening to rock music. People become big possessed or influenced by listening to rock music. And so when people are, especially teenagers, when teenagers are actually influenced, usually it's by obsession, I'll tell them, stop listening to all rock and roll and jazz. Not that all jazz is bad, but some of it's disorder. So I'll tell them, don't listen to any of it. And usually, within about 2 weeks, all of a sudden, they're feeling better, things are a lot going a lot better, and that type of thing. So I do talk about music in my book, too, about its effect psychologically, the different kinds of music and how they affect different faculties in different ways and that type of thing. And so that's something that you can take a look at, too. Yes?
Father, do you find that there are a lot of Protestant ministers and all that will come to you recognizing that really only a Catholic priest or religion, you know, has the authority to drive out the demons?
Well, some demons can be driven out without having the authority of a priest or the authority of the church. And so sometimes Protestants will have some success. But usually my experience is when I kind of watch them like on videos. By the way, the Vatican has forbidden the videotaping of exorcisms, which is why if you look on YouTube, there's not a single Catholic one on there. They're all Orthodox or Protestants. The church says that you can audio record them for the sake of studying it, investigating, because a lot of times demons will say things and it takes weeks, sometimes months, to sort out what were they really getting after, or they'll say something in a language you've never heard of. You need to take it to an expert because it may be the key to opening the thing up. But with Protestants, very often they do things that are just like, man, you're opening yourself up, but, you know, so, you know, like they'll converse with them and they'll talk with them, and you're just like, man, that's just, it's not a good idea. The church has done this for 2,000 years, so it knows the do's and don'ts. It lays out, don't do this, don't do that. That's one of the reasons why training is so important. Without the training, the exorcists are very often get themselves into trouble. With the training for the stuff is just like obsession cases, you don't need a whole lot of training. I mean, if you have it, that's good. But for possession cases, if you don't have training, you're going to end up in some serious trouble very quickly. Because what happens is, and this is something I pray for all the time, is that I don't cause more damage than I solve. Because demons can suggest stuff to you that seems absolutely reasonable, and it just ends up causing serious damage. Well, that's the problem with Protestants. They don't have this requisite theological underpinning, and they don't have the requisite humility very often, and so they end up with all sorts of problems. But they can liberate some people, but not all. And so you would think that they would begin to realize that, you know, there's some that just can't be driven out. So sometimes, too, they tend to think that someone's possessed when they're not. The Catholic Church is a bit more judicious, you know. So there are no legitimate cases of mental illness, and that's absolutely nothing to do with possession. And very often, they don't see, or are not able to see that.